Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're going to talk about canola a little bit on the show today and take your calls and questions all throughout the show as well at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Now, spring's getting closer, getting fired up, getting a lot of questions in, Brian, about this upcoming planting season.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I've been working on all morning is just some planning in terms of our scheduling and everything else. And it just got me thinking for the show today, just to talk real quick about the importance of planning ahead on your farm. And, you know, the big thing some people will say to me is, well, it's hard to plan ahead when I don't know what the weather's going to do. I get that. But, you know, we kind of have to plan a little bit for, well, what happens when we have adverse weather? What happens when we have good weather? But I just have found in our own operation, the more that I kind of plan ahead and say, okay, it's going to take me this many hours to harvest or this many hours to plant of the actual work. And then I've got the travel time, I've got, you know, the weather issues, all these kind of things. And just figuring out, and I actually do projections going ahead saying, okay, well, I think this is what we're going to get for yield on these acres. And I do it field by field even. And then, again, it comes down to planning for, do I have enough equipment? Do I have enough people? Do I need to hire another truck driver or whatever, or pay somebody to help us with trucking or any of these kind of things? But, I mean, that's what I spend at least some of the off-season doing. So then when it's time to go, we're ready to go. That's the big thing to be prepared. And that's the reason why I encourage people to plan ahead. The other big thing is when we start talking about this upcoming planting season, you know, there have been all these other things, all this other talk in our industry, everything from dicamba and some of these traits not approved. You know, now people are worried about, oh, what's going to happen with the renewable fuel standard and all these things that we kind of forget about. The most pressing problem we've really seen in the last 5 years has been weed resistance. And if you're going to stop some of these resistant weeds, you have to get a pre-emerge herbicide on. If that doesn't happen, you're in big trouble. And that's part of where this planning ahead thing has gotten me. I just say, okay, it's going to take this long to get that spraying done on those acres. Do I have the manpower to do that? Am I going to have to stop planting for just a little bit and go to spraying for
a day or
whatever?
Which, by the way, is a great idea to stop the planter for a little bit if you need to catch up on the spraying.
You can't necessarily say that. That again,
I can't necessarily say that.
No,
if you've
got
rain in the forecast, you need to stop the planter and get the sprayer going. And I know most guys are like, no way, never going to do it. But if you don't, all of a sudden it rains. You don't get back in the field for a week. Stuff pops up, like especially on soybeans.
Yeah, but this is exactly my point.
And then you can't get in and do the pre.
It's exactly my point that, okay, I've got to, if I say, look, I always get the best yields when my corn is in by April 25th and when my beans are in by May 5th. And I start running the timeline of how long does it take to plant, how long does it take to spray, what do I normally get for rain, all these other things, my contingency plans. I go, we've got the manpower here. We need another planter. Or, you know what, we're going to run the drill on a couple more fields of beans that would get us ahead enough to do these. I mean, it's some of that type of planning that I'm talking about. And, yeah, if you say you have to stop the planter, well, what's the alternative? You know what the alternative is? Doing some spraying right now. You can absolutely, like in our country here, a lot of these mornings, the ground is frozen in the morning. You can go out and spray herbicide now and get it out there, especially for your corn. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not going to be hurt at all. And now, hey, we've bought ourselves some more time right during planting season. So, again, I just really encourage you, take a look at what is your plan for your farm. How are you going to stop those resistant weeds? Do you have enough equipment, manpower, everything else? What are your contingency plans if things go wrong?
Well, I think planning out ahead is really good when you talk about weed resistance from this standpoint too, Brian. What's your crop going to be next year, and what modes of action are you going to use in that one? We talk so often about, well, I have to do the best thing to kill the weeds right now. And I get it. You have to raise a crop right now, but we have to look at what we're going to use in the future. And one of the things that is hitting me this year is Group 15's Outlook, Dual, Zidua, Harness, Surpass, those kinds of products. We use them as primary weed killers in corn because they're awesome on grass and they also get some small-seeded broadleaves. We're now using them in soybeans, both in pre-programs and in post-emerge programs. And that's just a word of caution for me. If I want to use it next year in corn, I'm probably not going to use it as a primary program in my pre. Now, I still may use a little bit post-emerge to try and help with some small-seeded broadleaves, but I don't know, three times the same chemistry in 2 years is tough. We've been down that road before, and it usually doesn't end well. So planning ahead for that weed resistance thing is a real big deal. And then just looking from year to year as you're talking about this and planning ahead at where those problem areas are. Like last year, for example, if we had a weed outbreak anywhere on the farm, we know for sure there's going to be a problem in that area this year. I mean, the odds are very, very strong that there's going to be a problem in that area, and it takes a while to get those problems gone. So just be real about it and say, you know, I know there's a problem in the back corner of that field. I'm going to get out there and address it this spring. Maybe I up my rate of my pre's just a little bit if I can stay within the labeled rates, or I just try to time things out so I can hit that spot first.
All right. Darren, you've been working and talking to a lot of seed breeders lately and looking at that. Anything along those lines that you say, boy, this is kind of new that guys should be looking at, thinking going ahead in the future, at least looking in plots, trying some stuff out? Anything new that looks good?
Well, I think the big thing is just being educated about it, just like everything else. And I know there's only so many things you can know. You have to be a great mechanic and you have to be a good bookkeeper and all this stuff. You can't be great at everything. But one of the things I think that's really important on your farm is understanding what you're putting in the ground for hybrids and seed varieties and so forth. And getting out and looking at some of that on a year-to-year basis is smart, just to be able to place stuff right. And I know you can play defense and say, well, I'm just going to go with things that have been out for a couple years, so I take a little bit less risk. Yeah, you can do that, but there are some exciting new things. There's some big improvements in terms of disease tolerance that I think are worthy of being considered this year. And then just seeing how they stack up with yield with the older ones is always key too. All right, we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about a lot more, including canola, on today's program. Stay tuned.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating to say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instinct and NSERV maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
Every single weld, angle, bolt, bend, pipe, leg, truss, flange, seal, tire, gear, wire, gooseneck, and all the other parts of a Renke pivot have been engineered for maximum durability. It's why we have the longest warranties in the business. Year after year, season after season, a Renke is designed to perform and match your expectations. To learn more, contact your local dealer or visit Renke.com. That's Reinke.com today.
On Ag PhD, we've been talking about agronomy for nearly 20 years now. The number one question besides agronomy we get each week is for help on grain marketing. That's why we've created Grain PhD. No, we're not able to tell you exactly when to hit the high in the market, but we will give you the education you need to feel just as knowledgeable about your grain decisions as you do your agronomy ones. Grain PhD is the best place to go for all your risk management and cash marketing needs. Just go to grainphd.com or call 844-GRAIN-01. Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're talking about canola on the show. It's a crop that we don't spend enough time on, according to some of our listeners. And I think there's some interesting things there and some management techniques that tie into other crops as well. So hopefully you'll find it an exciting show, even if you're not a primary canola grower. We'll start off north of the border here. We've got Scott with us right now up in Manitoba. Scott, how you doing today?
Good. I'm having a great day.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, when we think about canola, for a lot of growers north of where we farm, this has been the primary moneymaker lately. Where does canola fit in for you? Is this one that you try to get as many acres in as you can?
Yeah, we've been growing it for a few years, and it's been our cash crop for a while now, and we've been working on trying to get some other stuff more into our rotation, and we've been actually growing some more soybeans, but it's really our soybeans don't compete with it yet, really, I don't think either. It's still our money crop, you might call it, yeah.
All right, so what's the challenge with raising canola? Because I know it's not super easy. Is weed control the number one thing? Fertility? What would you say if somebody was just going to start into it that you wish you would have known going into it?
Well, probably weed control is a big one, and probably insects actually seem to be kind of getting bigger on us. We've been dealing more with flea beetles and some later season army worms and stuff like that that we've been kind of have been more the issues lately, I guess, that have been bugging us. So, but it's they're similar to soybeans in that you want to start with a good clean field and keep them clean, because it'll benefit you greatly in the long run, I think.
All right. I talk to some growers every year that say, I'm nervous about it. I'm nervous about volunteer canola. Has that been a real problem for you, or is it fairly easy to control?
It's not too hard to control, but it seems like you kind of have to bank on something else in your mix other than, even if you grow Liberty Link, it seems like you got to spray something other than Roundup to kill it. It can be resilient, but most crop systems have a good chemical to control it, and it's not too hard to control once you spray the right thing.
Have you found kind of a good rotation to help you with that too? Are you working wheat in right after it to have another option, or where do you like to put wheat in the rotation, before or after?
We last few years we've been growing wheat and canola, so it's either it goes before and after, and
okay,
it works. I don't know. It seems like if you grow it, you're going to have volunteers, and you're not going to, doesn't matter, seem to matter how much you rotate out of it. Those seeds are going to be in the soil for a while. So you just kind of bank on controlling them, and it works okay.
All right. You said you're trying to work soybeans in. What do you raise for soybeans up there? I mean, are guys trying to work that in as a third crop in the three crop rotation, or is it just kind of I'm going to put it in if I have this situation show up?
It's kind of a bit of both. We've been trying to work it in as a third crop into our rotation, so we're kind of not quite a third and a third and a third, but we're getting close. And it's been pretty good. We've got to grow pretty short season varieties, but we've had pretty good luck with them too. We've had yields upwards of 50 bushels an acre, which is amazing for us, and it doesn't do that every year, but those would be the good years, I guess. But they can do all right and make you some money too.
All right, so let's get down to that money question. This year, you're going to make these decisions here pretty quick. What's going in the ground? What's it going to be? You sticking to the 50-50, or are you going to try and do more or less of your canola acres?
I think we're going to probably cut a few canola acres and a couple wheat acres, and we're probably going to be about 25 or 30% of our acres will go into soybeans this year, I think. So it'll be a pretty good mix,
yeah,
on our farm.
Yep, that'll keep it interesting for sure. I've been talking to Scott here up in Manitoba. It's kind of interesting just to hear, you know, as you're shifting between crops, and so often we hear that in different areas of the country where you've got some other options. Well, hopefully, Scott, this is one of those years that the soybeans really pay off for you, so you know you made the right call.
You bet. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks, Scott. I've got Norm right now with us. He's up in northwest North Dakota. Norm, how are you today?
Good, Darren. How are you today?
Good. All right. I know you're in another spot where there's a lot of different crops grown. Where does canola fit into the rotation? Is that taking more and more acres each year, or are you on the way or on the opposite direction?
We like to keep maxing out our canola acres, but we're kind of restricted by rotation limitations as well as some herbicide carryover limitations.
Okay, speak about that herbicide carryover. Which ones hit you the worst where you're farming?
You know, Fierce used on soybeans or Extreme used on soybeans can cut our restriction or our, we have to have a longer time period between, especially with this last year being a little on the dry side. Those are the biggest ones. And then we also always like to leave a minimum of 3-year rotation between canola back to canola again. And if sunflower gets put on some acres, that's also going to get 3-year rotation as well.
Yep. So never shorter than 3 years and you're back to a sunflower or a canola. I get that. You know, we think about that dry weather, and this is one for listeners in other parts of the country that may not have the same concern. As we travel west, and especially west and north in the country, we have short growing season, number one, and then, man, if you guys are dry, it's not just dry, it's really dry. And how are you sitting right now, Norm? Are you getting enough moisture through the fall and winter that it might save you going into the spring?
Up until about 2 weeks ago, it was looking pretty tough, but then we got, you know, about a foot of snow. It was a wet snow, so that's looking promising, and we got some more today, and we're also expecting some more this coming weekend, another, you know, 6-7 inches, which can change, but that's what they're predicting. So it's giving us a little optimism as far as moisture goes, but we did go in pretty dry this fall.
Yeah, no, that's to say the least. It was really dry. Okay, so let's talk about the canola here just a little bit. So for canola acres in your part of the country, is it Liberty Link canola, or what are you planting for traits?
There is a lot of Liberty just because of the volunteer issue. We've been able to manage Roundup varieties on our farm, and we are sticking with the Roundup varieties this coming season. But we're one of the few that is actually still in the Roundup scenario. Most guys have gone to Liberty not to deal with it in the soybeans and stuff.
Sure.
We've been able to control the volunteers with Valor and Fierce, and it hasn't been an issue for us.
Yep. Yeah. Like you say, you do the 3-year rotation. You don't really worry about, you know, some of that chemistry that you may choose to use, wiping out any volunteers that are out there. Okay. When it comes to seeding rate, are you changing things on that? I hear some guys talking about lower seeding rates and having good results. Have you found a sweet spot for your area?
We're still at 5 pounds an acre. Just straight across the board, no matter what the seed size is or seed count per pound. I've tried to do it based on seed count, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and I had too thick of stands or too thin of stands, so I just went with 5 pounds, and it's worked pretty well for us. We're going to try to do some to the planter. I don't know if we'll do it this year, but some guys doing it that way have really cut their seeding rate down 2.5, 3 pounds. That adds, you know, quite a few dollars to the acre you save by cutting the rate in half or less in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that turns out for guys, because I know anything you can do to reduce cost is generally something that guys are going to try. But if you can do it without suffering a big yield penalty, then it's really worth doing. Hey, Norm, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate hearing from you, and good luck here. Hopefully you catch plenty of moisture here going into the spring.
All right, thanks, Darren.
Talking about canola on today's Ag PhD radio show. Also taking your calls and questions. Getting a number of emails in already today, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to some of those a little bit later in the show. Of course, you can just chat directly with Brian and me if you call 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Wow. Why treat your entire field for white mold if only parts of it are affected? Contan soil fungicide sprayed this fall after harvest is the only proactive way to reduce white mold potential for future crops. Locating and spot treating your affected acres with Contans every year and every crop is an affordable and effective control strategy for white mold. Contans fungicide attacks and reduces the sclerotia bodies in the soil that cause the problem. Scout the symptoms and treat the problem this fall with Contans. To find out more, go to SipCamRotam.com.
With Preaxor Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Make your fertilizer dollar go further with Quick Roots technology. This seed inoculant contains two powerful microbes that can free nutrients bound up in your soil. And it can help lead to greater nutrient availability for improved root and shoot growth, which allows for better uptake of N, P, and K, key ingredients for a healthy crop. Quick Roots technology can help increase your yield potential and maximize your nutrient investment. See how you can make your fertilizer dollar go further at MonsantoBioAg.com/QuickRoots.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
638, 6,272,639. There are 6,272,640 square inches in an acre. We counted. Why? Because we designed the TigerMate 255 field cultivator and 2000 series early riser planter to maximize every single one. So when you create the most level seedbed in the industry and target a nickel-sized area to plant a seed and never miss, you'll know in high-efficiency farming, there's one name to count on, Case IH. Rethink productivity. Learn more at caseih.com/inches.
AgriLiquid knows farming is tough, especially going into planting season. So many decisions and not enough time. Fertilizer is a big investment that's too important to risk. Make your crop nutrition strategy our problem. Make the most of your fertilizer dollar with AgriLiquid. You can count on AgriLiquid to provide the products, compatibility, and application flexibility you want and the research-proven results you need. Visit AgriLiquid.com to find a retail partner near you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Been talking about canola on the show. We're getting a number of emails on different crops as well. You can certainly send your questions in, radio@agphd.com. Now we'd gladly take them. Also, you can just give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. And we would love to talk about any agronomic topic you have going on. When we think about canola, I think it's interesting, Brian. We do focus on seeding rate and herbicides and weed control and those kind of things. But, man, I like starting out with fertility and looking at soil tests and thinking about what are we going to need to raise that crop. And I think, especially as we get into different parts of the country when we're on multiple year rotations, fertility programs really change. Some guys say, well, I'm putting out my fertility program for 2 years, or I'm putting out my fertility, or I put P and K out ahead of this 3 year rotation that I'm going to do. But it's so hard to guess, well, what are you going to get for yields each year if you're doing multi-year programs? For me, I like to just start with a soil test, look at what my goal is on the canola or whatever crop, and start with that and just fertilize for this year. That's about the closest I can get.
All right. So on the Ag PhD Fertilizer Removal app, you can download that to your smartphone or your tablet. It's a free app. We worked on that in conjunction with the International Plant Nutrition Institute a few years ago. You can pull up canola, and I was just comparing this. I was looking at something the Canola Council had and seeing what their numbers said, and they said nitrogen 100 to 123 pounds for a 35-bushel crop, 46 to 57 pounds of phosphate, 73 to 89 pounds of K2O potassium, and 17 to 21 pounds of sulfur. But here's the whole thing. I don't have any issue with their numbers, but what I like is a little more detail on stuff. In other words, what's the grain going to remove? What's it going to take to produce the grain? And what's it going to take to produce the stover? So in other words, if you take the crop off the field and you leave all the residue out there, what are you actually removing for nutrients? And that's the split we've got in the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. So for example, we say, or International Plant Nutrition, their numbers are 46 pounds of phosphate for a 35 bushel canola crop, for example, but only 33 pounds leaves the field with the grain, 13 pounds stays with the stover. So my point is, yes, we've got to make sure that we've got those numbers in the beginning. We've got those numbers coming out, the total number. But if you just want to replace what you've removed from your canola crop going into the next crop, you don't need quite that much fertility. Also, I'd really encourage you, take a look at some of the micronutrients. I know that a canola crop doesn't take a lot of copper or a lot of manganese or zinc or boron. It takes a fair amount of iron, by the way. But, you know, all these nutrients are important. And if you don't have any out there, or let's say you've been removing micronutrients for the last 20 years and haven't put any back at all, it's very possible that you could be having issues even because of some of the micronutrients. It's something we talk to farmers about a lot in corn and soybeans and wheat. Well, why wouldn't we talk about it in canola as well? Also, you know, when we start talking about low yields, or as I would often call them, the average yields, why are we doing that? Why are we not looking at, well, what's the very best spot you had on your farm? And you know darn well that that spot didn't have any more rain than other areas. What do we need to do to replicate that? So I usually like to look at the lowest yielding area and the highest yielding area in both soil tests and tissue tests. So one of the things Darren and I have been talking about is, okay, well, let's look at the high versus the average. And so maybe it's high, average, and low. So maybe three different spots in a field. But the point is, we really want you to look at fertility. There's no difference between canola and any other crop in the world. We need great drainage. We need not necessarily a tremendous crazy amount of pounds of fertility, but we need a well-balanced fertility program, a well-balanced and healthy soil. And again, it's drainage first, then fertility, then I'm going to start talking about the rest of the stuff. And in terms of the weed control side, we do at least have some options because there is Roundup Ready canola, there's Liberty Link, there's Clearfield, and obviously there's conventional. So we got a lot of different choices out there on what you want to do, but in all cases, I would strongly encourage you to start with a pre-emerge herbicide program. A lot of times we're talking to guys, if they're doing conventional till, with just trifluralin, spending, you know, maybe $4 an acre or something like that. So not necessarily an arm and leg, but you got to do something that's going to help you early on with grass, and especially with some of those small seeded broadleaves. Roundup Ready, you know, if you don't have resistance, that's awesome. Same thing with Liberty. We haven't seen any resistance. The good news is we've got some good, cheap options there in both the Roundup Ready and the Liberty. When we go to Clearfield, I just caution you on a couple of things. First of all, if you think, oh, Beyond is going to clear up all my weeds, remember that Beyond isn't going to kill any ALS-resistant weeds. So that can be problematic. Also, with that Beyond, it's basically the same thing as Raptor. And, you know, for me, I still worry at least a little bit about carryover. I realize it doesn't carry over as much in high pH as it does in low pH. It's unusual in that respect. It carries over more in low pH soil, Pursuit and Raptor do. But still, I worry about it. If you say, well, I'm going to run the full rate of Beyond, okay, you can do that. I don't know. I get a little bit concerned going forward. Let's say you want to raise wheat or corn or something like that next year. Are you going to have some carryover? So I would look at that hard. Was mentioned a little bit earlier to take a look at what herbicides have been used in the past. And let's see, I know one of our callers, I think it was Norm, mentioned Fierce. And I thought, Fierce? Carry over to canola, that's not the first thing that pops into my head because Valor doesn't last that long in the soil. And usually the rates we're running with Valor, not a big problem. Yes, if you're using a really high rate, it could potentially be a problem, or at least label-wise it is. But it's really the Zidua that requires 12 months. Now, Do I really honestly think that Zidua is going to carry over and hurt the canola? I don't, but it's possible, and it's certainly on the label that you can't do it. So we got to be a little careful about these things. I thought Darren made a good point. You know, if it's dry, and you look at where a lot of the canola is raised, it's cool. Well, dry and cool is not a real great recipe for getting rid of residual herbicides. So be a little careful about that. And also, when you start to go to some of these herbicides, like I mentioned already, Pursuit and Raptor, I think about even Authority that we use in soybeans. I mean, those things can last a very long time in the soil, so we got to be real careful. And again, if we have good drainage, we have good soil health, we're going to break down that residual a little bit faster because there's more microbial life in the soil. So those are some of the things. You got to look real hard at disease, too, at insects. I mean, a lot of different things you can do for canola. It's a tremendous crop. I think that that there is certainly a lot of potential there. I feel the same way with every crop that we raise right now. I mean, I think about this. We were talking the other day even about pastures, and a lot of people, you know, talk about their pastures and, well, it's just, you know, it's there. I'm going to kill the weeds, whatever. I'm thinking about how do I increase production on my pasture ground? Anything that you've got, you got to look at all aspects of it. And again, it starts with drainage and fertility. You got to have a good healthy soil, get a good base going, get those early season weeds under control. Now you're in pretty good shape. You're set up for at least a better year. And then you got to look really hard at the disease and insect side. So anyway, what I would say is start treating or think if canola isn't your main crop, think about it the same way you think about your main crop. So for a lot of farmers in the Midwest, their heart is in corn. Just like when I go down south, for a lot of farmers I talk to, their heart is in cotton. Okay, so those things, whether it's the corn in the Midwest or the cotton with some of these farmers we work with in the south, I mean, that's where they put a lot of their time and energy. And guess what? They put their resources there too. And it's no surprise, things usually turn out pretty well. So I'm just trying to say, if you add to your management on any of these crops, you can do really well. So we again, think there's a lot of potential with canola. Yep, there aren't a lot of people super happy about the price there, but I can't find a lot of people that are super happy about the price of corn or wheat or a lot of these other crops either. So, but I would say this. If we do a great job with production, if we produce more bushels in almost any crop, typically that's where the most profit comes from. So we got to figure out how do we produce more bushels profitably. I know you can do it.
Well, we're going to take some of your questions for the Ag PhD mailbag coming up right after this. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Hey soybean growers, are resistant weeds still tripping you up? Then get Trypsin ZC herbicide from UPI. With two modes of action, Trypsin ZC is a highly effective pre-emergent herbicide with excellent residual control. And with its new innovative formulation, it's even easier to use. So this season, don't let resistant weeds go on a power trip in your fields. Try Trypsin ZC herbicide. To learn more about Trypsin ZC, contact your crop protection consultant or your dealer. Always read and follow label directions.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass agronomic rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery on farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better. Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
What makes Phytogen brand varieties flat out better in West Texas? We ask growers like Lance Williams how Phytogen is helping his cotton farm thrive.
We grow cotton in the Texas Panhandle for limited water use. It's a good fit for us with the rotation to corn and dry land. It's the best money-making crop we've got. Phytogen has allowed us to expand our cotton acres and grow because of new herbicide tolerances, and we are able to grow more cotton efficiently and effectively. Phytogen seed has taken us to the next level with fiber quality. We've seen loan values that we've never seen before with it, and our yields are good as well. Phytogen varieties have early season vigor like no other. They will come up in cool, wet soils and also have great storm tolerance in the fall. Bottom line, we make more money with Phytogen seed. That's how it's flat out better for us.
Lance Williams is thriving, and with Phytogen brand varieties, so can you. And now Enlist Duo Herbicide is registered for use on Phytogen cottonseed with the Enlist cotton trait. Visit Phytogen.com to find your local Phytogen representative and learn more.
Hey everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We are broadcasting for the Morton Studio, and it is time for the Ag PhD mailbag. We've got a number of emails in. We're going to get into those. And of course, if you have an agronomic question, you can just give us a call too. It's 844-44-AG-PHD. This is a live show here. We'd love to hear from you. All right, first one, Brian. Jonathan in upstate New York. Thank you for all you do. I really enjoy your show. I've got winter wheat out there, and on your fertilizer removal app, it says 100 bushels of wheat needs 186 pounds of N. I'm not aware of anybody putting on close to that much. I'm wondering how much I should be putting on to meet the yield goals, because my goal is 100 bushels.
All right, excellent question. I was just pulling that up on the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. Okay, for nitrogen, 100 bushel winter wheat. It says grain 116 pounds, Stover 70 pounds. So the grand total is 186 pounds. And yeah, if you say 186 pounds, wow, that does seem like a lot for 100 bushel wheat. I want you to think about this. Two things. Number one, what do you have for carryover nitrogen, or some people call it residual nitrogen from the year before? And two, how much soil organic matter do you have, and how quickly is it going to break down? So my point is, let's say that I have 30 pounds carryover from last year. It's very possible. A lot of people are raising a broadleaf crop like soybeans, for example, a legume that produces its own nitrogen. And a lot of times we'll leave some nitrogen in the soil. You can't always count on it. Might only leave 10, might leave 50 or 80 pounds. So that's why we encourage you to test. And then the second thing is, you got to look at that organic matter. We'll typically say, where we farm, okay, in South Dakota, roughly we're going to talk 20 pounds, maybe even as high on the outside end of 30 pounds of nitrogen comes available per year for each 1% of organic matter. So let's say I had 5% organic matter times 20, that's 100 pounds. Now, that's for the entire growing season all the way into October here. So if the wheat comes off in July, how much of that nitrogen is going to come available by July? Well, probably not very much. But you're still going to get 5 pounds, maybe 10 pounds out that way. So even 5 pounds times 5% organic matter is 25 pounds, and maybe on the outside, 50. So my point is, I'd really like to see your soil tests. How much nitrogen do you have carried into this, going into your winter wheat crop? So you could soil test, let's say, a couple weeks in advance of seeding your winter wheat crop, see how much nitrogen is sitting there at that point. And then you can see what your organic matter is and see what you're going to get for breakdown. Now, the other thing that I would point out is, when we talk spring wheat, I'm not going to get a lot of that nitrogen. With winter wheat, let's say you were seeding September 1. You know what? In September and in October in a lot of states, like in our area, we're going to have some more free release of that nitrogen. So I'm going to probably get another, you know, I'm going to get 5 pounds out in the fall. I'm going to probably get 5 pounds out in the spring by, you know, early July when we would harvest our wheat. So it's very possible then 10 times let's say again, 5% organic matter is 50 pounds. So anyway, those are the things you need to look at. And yes, you don't have to apply 186 pounds, but that is what your crop's going to need.
All right, thanks for the question. Let's go on to the next one. This one's from Matt, and he said, I'm a full-time firefighter, but looking to get into the tiling business. I'm working part-time for a local tiler during the fall season mainly, but looking to expand. Wondering if you're going to do a tiling clinic in the future, or where's a good place to find information on tiling?
Yeah, so we have a bunch of information on tiling and many YouTube segments. We've done a lot of work on that in the past. We also have an AgPhD tiling DVD. I think that's available at our website at agphd.com. Other than that, are we going to do a tiling clinic in the future? Darren and I are still debating what we're going to do next winter for topics. It's very possible. What do you think, Darren?
Boy, getting Brian to talk about tile is pretty tough.
All right, so the possibility remains that we may do a tiling clinic next winter. It would most likely be at the Ag PhD Field Day site. We've got a tremendous facility there where we can host up to 1,000 farmers all in one shot in a really nice environment. And be able to bring equipment inside too, which is nice to see, especially when we talk tiling. So yeah, the odds are pretty high we're going to have one. It'll either be next January or February, most likely February.
Okay, thanks for the question. Got one from Gordon here. And first of all, Gordon, we really should give a shout out to Gordon's wife, Sue. Apparently, Sue let Gordon listen to Ag PhD radio podcasts for 700 miles of car driving. Sue, you're either a saint or very hard of hearing. I'm not sure, but...
Well, maybe she just wanted to sleep the entire way, and she thought that would help her.
I'm not sure, but I guess, hey, that's a big shout-out for Sue. Good job. All right, so Gordon says, for the first time, we're planning on taking advantage of a premium price for non-GMO beans. We currently don't have any herbicide-resistant weeds on our farm. We're full tillage, but we're debating on the herbicide program. So a little research that I've done has suggested that Metribuzin, Pursuit, and Dual are effective on the weeds that we're dealing with, such as pigweed, ragweed, velvet leaf, lamb's quarters, fall panicum, and then here's two of your favorites, Brian, black nightshade and yellow nutsedge. All right, that's quite a mix of weeds there, Gordon. Okay, so his questions are, what would you suggest be our first choice with this mix, pre-plant incorporated or pre-emerge? And then what rates would you recommend of these products? And I'm asking this because I read something that one of the brothers had written about a half rate of Pursuit and wondering where half rates are acceptable and where they're not.
Yeah, so we always worry about weed resistance and that type of thing, but when you're using multiple modes of action, that obviously really helps. So when you've got it in combination with a couple other modes of action, that's a good thing. I do talk a lot about half rate of Pursuit. The reason why is mainly because of carryover. We've seen so much carryover over the years. And could you go three-quarter rate? Sure. Could you go full rate? Well, it depends on where you're at in the country and how good your soil is and everything, how quickly you can break it down. So I'm not going to say in no cases would I ever recommend a full rate of Pursuit, but most of the time I'm usually talking a half rate and it's for nightshade. So when I look at that mix, I like the idea that you're going Metribuzin. Having a little bit of Pursuit in there is okay. But here are the two things I think you're missing. And this is just my opinion. You can go with whatever you want to, obviously. But the Dual, I've never really liked. I've always felt that's a little hard on beans when I'm running PPI. And that's my preferred method, is lightly incorporate it. Keep it, you know, a couple inches deep. The more shallow, the better. But anyway, I'd rather see you run with a yellow. If you're going to incorporate, I'd use trifluralin. It's cheaper. It's better. It's easier on the beans. That's the direction that I'd run. I'd run like a pint and a half of trifluralin instead of the Dual. With the Pursuit, yeah, I'm typically just going to run a couple ounces, and it's fine if you want to leave that in there. The price keeps coming down, so it's not that expensive, especially if you're just running a half rate. But what I would throw in is either Valor or Authority. So I don't know what your rotation is or anything else, but I would just tell you the three pre's that we talk about all the time are Metribuzin, a yellow, Treflin, Sonalin, or Prowl, and then a PPO, either Valor or Authority. Valor and Authority are really good. They're better than any of these other ones we've talked about on pigweed and lamb's quarters. So the other weed that we haven't addressed yet is nutsedge. That's maybe why you're thinking Dual should be in there. But I will tell you this. Dual isn't perfect, number one. You're probably not going to use a super high rate if you're going beans anyway. And where we see nutsedge is typically in poor drainage areas. So whenever we've had nutsedge on our farm, we typically run Bassegran early post when the nutsedge is small to burn it down to the ground. But the permanent fix is really fix the drainage. So once you get the drainage fixed, you get the soil pH right, you get the fertility right, then a lot of times your crop gets really healthy and the nutsedge just disappears. So I like doing that method. Then I don't even have to use a herbicide for the nutsedge.
That'd be an awesome long-term strategy. And good luck on those non-GMO beans, Gordon. And thanks for listening to the podcast as well. Stay tuned. We've got more Ag PhD mailbag questions right after this.
What's the quickest way to ruin a nice spring day? Seeing glyphosate-resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory get past your defenses and show up in your fields. It's more than a nuisance, and it will cause yield loss if you don't take care of it soon. So how do you cover the gap between glyphosate and resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory? With the fast-acting post-emergence broadleaf control of Resource Herbicide. Resource is the ideal partner for glyphosate because it adds speed to your post-herbicide application. Resource quickly takes down problem weeds that glyphosate misses, so you can start fighting back immediately. No matter what weed threat you're facing, the best solution is a diversified management program to cover the gap and stop resistant weeds. Valent USA Corporation has several fast-acting, broad-spectrum post-emergence control solutions, including Resource, Cobra Herbicide, and Select Max Herbicide with Inside Technology. Talk with your retailer today to find out which one is right for your field and visit Valent.com/cover the gap for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
Are you confident that your fertilizer program is the best use of your hard-earned dollar? The folks at AgriLiquid are committed to performance of their products and of your crops. Their unique ability to conveniently apply exactly what your crop needs to optimize your fertility program will not only produce the yield and quality you want, but can also save you valuable time and money. AgriLiquid, for the soil, for the plant, for the future. Find a dealer near you at agriliquid.com.
What is the Corvus Zone? It's the weed-free area between the rows. But only when you use Corvus, the one corn herbicide that delivers three levels of grass and broadleaf weed defense. Burn down, residual, and reactivation with rain. You want season-long control of the toughest weeds, including resistant ones? Use Corvus pre-emergence corn herbicide, America's preferred choice. Corvus is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
This is one commercial for two herbicides, so we'll have to make this quick. Okay, here goes. Satellite HydroCap is great for pre-emergent control of grasses and broadleaf weeds and has a long residual life. New Satellite Flex, featuring UPI's patented transverse technology, delivers a high level of active ingredient over an extended soil coverage area. Both offer excellent mixing and handling characteristics and are valuable options for your resistant management plants. Whew. For more information on Satellite herbicides, contact your crop protection consultant or your dealer. Always read and follow label directions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. You can ask your agronomic question, and that doesn't always mean fields. I got one from Walt in Colorado, and he said, I've been a big fan of your show ever since we started watching RFD TV in the early 2000s. While I'm not in production ag, I've always had an interest in farming and appreciate what you're doing to support quality farming practices. Hey, thanks, Walt. We appreciate that. He said, my question for you today is about our property. There's an outdoor arena, ditches, and a swath of bare ground. I spent a lot of time every spring and summer trying to kill the weeds, mainly pigweed and kochia. Been using Landmaster out of a 25-gallon ATV sprayer. The Roundup is still working for me on the pigweed, but the 2,4-D is what I need in there to get the kochia. It seems to be Roundup tolerant, but it's requiring pretty high rates. In my 25-gallon tank, I'm putting a half a gallon in, and then it takes me three tanks to spray about an acre and a half. So let's see, what would that be?
Well, yeah, so a gallon per acre then of Landmaster.
Half a gallon. Yeah, that's right. Gallon per acre. Yep.
Okay. Darren's a little slow on the
mess. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So anyway, he said it takes me normally 3 to 4 apps between April and September. And if we get heavy rainfall, it can easily get out of hand. So my questions for you, is there a pre-emerge herbicide that I could use that would not be regulated? So I wouldn't need a license necessarily. And is Landmaster truly my best option? All my neighbors are using products that require a license. And I'm wondering, maybe I just need to change my rate on the Landmaster. And he said, one other note, I want to avoid those ground sterilants because we border some farm ground and our ditches flow irrigation water during certain times of the year.
All right, unless I miss something, Darren, let me just throw this out at you, see what you think. How about Distinct? What'd be wrong with Distinct? Okay, so again, Landmaster, just so we're clear on this. Landmaster is a combination of Roundup and 2,4-D amine, and roughly you're going to get, let's see, in a gallon of that, I'm just doing the quick math here, be about 48 ounces, so about 3 pints of amine and about 36 ounces of Roundup.
Yeah, that's not a crazy high rate. So you could even bump it up another third.
Whoa. We got to make sure we're staying on label. So I haven't looked at the label to see what that is. But why are we running with that, and what else are we trying to – so – he wants to kill everything, apparently. That's the only my only question mark.
Yeah,
with the
okay, so if you did the Distinct brand, that doesn't get the grasses. But you would get those broadleaves better than you've ever gotten them before.
Correct.
I mean, it's really good on that. And it has a short amount of residual, especially when you aren't getting much rainfall. So depending on where you're at in Colorado, if it's not raining much, that would be okay.
Yeah, so the Distinct would be much better on the broadleaves. And you could always throw a little bit of Roundup in there. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Roundup's pretty cheap.
If those are the only weeds that I'm after, because he mentioned pigweed and kochia, that's all I heard you say.
That's all that he mentioned.
And what did he say? Did he say farmyard, or what did he say?
No, he's got an outdoor arena.
Oh, arena. Yeah.
Ditches, okay, now I'm with and, you. And a little bit of bare ground, too.
Yeah, well, the ditches, that's the thing. When we start talking about ditches, there are a lot of different kinds of ditches, but I usually think about a ditch as we want to leave the grass. So
yeah.
You know, that's why I...
That's a good question
that's
here,
what brought
if
me
you,
to the
if
Distinct.
If you want to leave the grass, then straight Distinct would be a good option.
Yes, otherwise throw a Roundup
or straight 2,4-D, you could do that too. You could use something like, these new 2,4-D choline products. Like
Freelix. You could, but if that's not working well for... I mean, 2,4-D is not that great on kochia, and the kochia is Roundup resistant.
He said it's got
to
be small.
Right, so that's where I go to the dicamba, but I like Distinct better. I mean, Distinct has some dicamba in it, but it's got that difluphensapyr, so that's probably the direction that I'd go.
All right, well, either way, Walt, if you need to kill grass, keeping that Roundup in there is a good thing. Otherwise, you'd go with the straight broadleaf killer like a Distinct.
And that shouldn't require any special labeling. I feel pretty confident in saying that for the state of Colorado as well.
But in terms of a long-term soil residual product that you could put out there to control things.
Well, he said he didn't want that anyway.
Want the sterilant, but...
Well, that's pretty much what you're at. I mean, could you throw something else in there like Valor?
I'm thinking like, okay, let's say you want to keep grass. What about something like pendimethalin? Or Prowl. You know, we see a lot of guys doing that. It wouldn't be the greatest on those particular weeds.
Whereas Valor would be better. Valor would be better on the pigweed and kochia. So.
Yeah, but it'd be a little... Well, I don't know if it'd be harsh on the grass or not. It's got some grass activity.
Yeah, it's going to ding up the grass a little. All right, so a lot of different ways we could go. And you can see, just with our discussion here, this is where a lot of times when Darren and I are talking to farmers, we get to ask them the point-blank question. Okay, so what do you really have for an issue? How long do you want residual? I mean, there are a lot of options to kind of talk through on a lot of these things.
All right, I got one from Joel here in Western Kentucky, and he said, looking at variety selection for corn and soybeans, 112 to 115 day corn and 4.5 relative maturity beans are normal for our area. However, I'm pushing my dad to try some shorter maturity corn and soybean varieties to get the crop off sooner on some key fields so we could get tiling done and some other fall work just for this one year. What do you think about picking a shorter variety in this kind of situation that may not have quite the top-end yield potential, but it would give us more time so we could for sure get that tiling and dirt work done?
Well, it's still got pretty good yield potential. And here, we don't raise anything that long. I mean, the longest day stuff we'll raise is 105, maybe 108 day corn. You know, a group two, early group two soybean. Well, we've had early group two soybeans, at least in spots in fields, yielding 100. Our best field average ever has been 80. And we're in dryland South Dakota. And our best corn field ever is better than 260. So, and that's with early day stuff compared to what you're raising. So that's not the real problem. The only question is, when is your heat going to hit you and when is your rain going to hit you? In other words, if it times out better for that 115 and the 4.5, well, then obviously that's the winner. So if it's a short-term deal, though, a lot of times how I look at this on our farm, because we've done the same thing, we just put wheat in so we have more time. But you could certainly do that in your geography with an earlier corn or soybean. I'm just trying to say here, I don't mind it so much when it's a sacrifice for one year, and that tile really pays. Also, we've done a lot of tiling in crop. So that's the other way that you could go with this, is still do your tiling right through a standing crop. And I know it sounds crazy at first, and I thought so in the beginning too before we started doing it, but I was like, you know what? We're only pulling a single shank, at the most one every 50 feet. And if we do it real early when the corn or the beans are really small, yep, we run them over, but they come back pretty good. And let's face it, we're putting tile in because the drainage stinks in the first place. So how good was our yield going to be anyway? So I'd rather have it in faster and get it done that way. So that's actually been my preferred method.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. And good luck this spring here. Got one from Mike. And he said, I'm growing potatoes and dry beans in Idaho. My question is the white mold that we have in our beans and spuds the same disease that you have in soybeans? And will the controls you talk about for soybeans work on our crops in Idaho?
Yes. It's the same stuff, sclerotinia white mold. And, you know, for the whole thing, okay, let's even take dry beans and soybeans. A lot of times we think about those as pretty similar. Well, I can spray Cobra on my soybeans and I can't on the dry beans. But the fungicides, as far as I'm trying to think of anything that wouldn't be labeled, oh, Domark maybe not. But, I mean, pretty much everything that's labeled in soybeans is going to be labeled in dry beans. Endura is the best, but Proline is real close. A lot of people like that. So, I mean, you've got some options there.
Yeah, there are a number of different products out there, and you can look at the active ingredients in them. There may be some different names and some combo products and those kinds of things. So that's something that we see where we'll see multiple names, especially as products have gone off patent here now. There's a lot of fungicides.
Yeah, but Endura and Proline aren't off patent yet.
No, and those would be the better ones. Okay, so from our experience, the higher dollar products have been worth the money in the areas where white mold is bad.
Well, yeah.
You know, if you can spot
like
treat,
else.
It's something that we're kind of looking at on our own farm. Maybe we can get by with some of the cheaper options and spot treat in parts of the field that are...
with the expensive options.
Yeah, high and dry or something like that where we aren't going to have big issues and then...
Okay, spot spray where it's bad... Yeah, not where it's high and dry and we don't have issues. Yes.
And I said we could get by the cheaper options where it's high and dry and we don't have big issues.
Absolutely.
But in lower areas and areas where there's less wind and those kinds of things, like we even see it along tree belts, and if you've got a corn field next to you, so you've got 10-foot tall corn that's just a solid wall blocking the wind, we definitely see more white mold in those areas.
And another thing we found in soybeans, manganese. Make sure you have good soil levels and plant levels of manganese. That's really helped in soybeans. Haven't run the studies yet on potatoes and dry beans, but I assume the same.
Thanks for listening today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.